Hello, John.
Hello, Alex.
Do you know what I hate?
What do you hate?
I hate when I'm on the massive field of battle that the entire book has led up to, and Arjuna is bothering me. He's like, wah, I don't know what my dharma is. Please show me your godly form. And I'm like, fine, I'll take on my godly form. And I turn myself on and glow with the fire of a thousand suns and say, I am become death, destroyer of worlds. And Arjuna's like, fine, I guess I'll do my dharma. That releases me from moksha, and then everything will be great.
We've all been there.
Yeah, I know. So anyway, what's Oppenheimer? I'm gonna explode like atomic bomb. Atomic bomb. Atomic bomb. The only thing I know about this movie is that I've read the Bhagavad Gita, and I'm like, boy, they put that quote in a dumb place.
Sure. I've never read a book ever, as we've established on the show. But
oh no, it's just like in the early part of the movie. Like, I mean, famously his quote is, I become death, destroyer of the world.
Right.
They do that like Solo, a Star Wars story thing where you're like, hey, you find out where everything came from early on. And like him saying that while he's fucking in the early movies, like, I mean, you know, okay, whatever, man. Like, I don't know. It set the tone.
Some of Nolan's faults are here, definitely, in one of them. When we talked about this in like Interstellar, whatever, like, well, they'll just repeat the same thing over and over again and then pretend that it has like that gives it weight by just repeating it all the time.
Yeah.
But in this one, I think it's done better because so often those meanings are like switched, or like what when you heard this the one time, it now means something different now. Whereas the, like an Interstellar again, like this, it just was like, remember how important this is. This feels very important.
Yeah.
But in that case, yeah, that felt a little bit like Hans Dice a bit. Which, speaking of Solo, glad to see Alden Ehrenreich in it. And I'm glad I'm glad he did not get put into actor jail for Solo, because that guy is hilarious and wonderful. And so I was glad to see him in this.
He's really good in this. And I didn't put my finger, I'm like, that guy looks familiar. And I just didn't like, I just kind of didn't until I like brought up IMDb before we started recording. It was like, oh fuck, that's fucking, that's Han Solo himself.
But a lot of great performance in this. I kind of was thinking about you watching this. I'm like, this movie is full of names and faces. This is bad news for Alex.
Well, okay. So the only thing that sees me on this movie, not actor wise, cause a lot of them, I don't know their names, but I did go through a phase where I got really into physics, or at least reading about physicians, physiotropes, fizzy lifting drinks.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're called.
Yep.
But no, I read about Einstein.
Wonka instead of Oppenheimer.
Yeah, that's what we're supposed to be.
Ah, right? Crap. Same guy.
It's
basically
a sadistic guy. It's a sadistic guy using his brains brings unholiness onto the universe. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
I got into physics for a while, so I read about Hawking and Einstein and stuff, and a little bit about Oppenheimer. So like a lot of these names, I know from that, and not in like a I'm a fucking dummy. Like that wasn't like, oh, I'm so smart and open. I just found them interesting, and I can't do a fucking equation to save my life. Yeah. I just want to be very clear here. This is not one of those like when I read the book things. Like no, I just literally. I thought they were interesting humans. So I know their names. Like I know like Niels Bohr and stuff and Kurt Gödel, there's a great book, Gödel Escherbach, which is the most complicated book I've ever read. But they talk about Kurt Gödel in that.
As soon as I heard the name Niels Bohr, all I could think of was the Simpsons joke, The Boring World of Niels Bohr.
Oh, yeah.
And I was thinking about how like, imagine like this guy blasted open a wall in physics and had all these amazing theories and stuff like that and influenced a lot of stuff. And all I think is like, oh, a joke on The Simpsons.
Yeah.
And I choose to blame society for that rather than myself.
I think that's probably the best thing to do. That's what I do. Because here, let me tell you my Niels Bohr thing, because it's also a joke. It's a funny quip that Niels Bohr said. So they were going into Niels Bohr's office, I think in Princeton or where the fuck he was out of. And he had a horseshoe hanging over the door. And somebody asked him, well, why do you have a horseshoe hanging over the door? And Niels Bohr says, oh, it's for good luck. And the guy's like, well, you're like one of the founders of quantum theory. Like, you really believe in luck? And Niels Bohr says, well, I've been told you don't have to believe in it for it to be efficacious. And so it's like, fuck yeah, Niels Bohr, because that is some fucking quantum theory joke right there. Where it's like, well, yeah, you know, you don't have to believe the work. And it's like, wait, but then you have to believe it. It's like, oh, fuck, I just quantum theory this fucking punchline.
The comedy style.
I mean, I'm not saying you open with it. I'm just saying for a physicist. That's solid.
Yeah, this might be, this is up there now with my favorite Nolan movies. I think
that's funny. You and I have such weird fucking Nolan takes. Cause like, This movie kind of made me think that I actually don't like Christopher Nolan that much.
See, I think, because I think this is, I mean, this has some of the same weaknesses and stuff like that, but I think part of my lens is like, when, like, seeing what he does without Jonathan Nolan, I have a bias. And so I think, like, I think I some of the thing about some of the things in this and how it could be weighted down by Jonathan Nolan going like, yeah, but we need to underscore just how important everything is. And I think that this doesn't have that same kind of bullshit, which is good.
I just came away feeling very like, it looks beautiful. Mm-hmm. The acting is amazing. He actually scored it in a way that I understood the dialogue, which has been a major like hit.
Right.
And other than the parts that like where you're supposed to, like there was like that vroom, vroom, vroom and the stomping underneath it. Like obviously that was meant to be slightly over the dialogue. That's fine. Like all of the stuff that I usually bitch about is like not there. And it's like gorgeous and all of the acting is amazing. But I came away from going, I don't think I know this character any better than I did coming in. And I don't think the story actually told us anything. It's like I don't know. It didn't do much for me. You know, I wanted to see him more tortured and like, you kind of see that a bit maybe, but yeah, I don't know. Left wanting because I wanted to like this a lot. Like it's physicists. It's like a big, stupid movie. Robert Downey Jr. is finally going back to acting. Yeah. Cillian Murphy. I'm like, this is going to be awesome. And it's like, yeah, I mean, yes. I mean, just solid B. Like it was a good movie. Like it was 3 hours and I came away going, yep, the guy that invented the bomb was probably a little morally confused about it afterwards.
Yeah. Well, I think it's so much more than just him though. I mean, I think that's part of why you have the split with him and the fission and fusion of him and Oppenheimer and Strauss. And I liked that it did kind of like lose steam a little bit after the creation of the bomb. Cause that they really had the momentum going that. So I was a little unsure at first, but I came to really like that last third, which is, I like when things sort of vacillate between very big and very small in that, like, this changing of humanity, these brand new physics, all this stuff. But then it's not like shitty interpersonal squabbles based on like a couple of slights.
Yeah. I'm not immune to that. I think maybe I just wanted more of the physics stuff. It's a little. Yeah, I don't know. Like, especially once the bomb went off, it didn't grab me again. Other than like, I was happy to be watching those performances. Mm-hmm. Wait. I want to walk that back. I really like the after the bomb stuff. I don't like it after all the movie I watched. Like, if I just said, "Oh, I want to watch this movie again," and started from the bomb going off the first time, I think I'd really like it because there's some really good stuff in there. I mean, we'll get to it eventually, but like, just after watching that first whole chunk, it's like, oh, great, another. I don't know. It was like a. I don't even know how to describe it. You know those movies that, like, I guess it should be split into two, but, like, it actually would suck if it got split into two. Mm-hmm. So you're just like, oh, I guess either just tonally inconsistent or something. Eh.
Yeah, well,
I'm disappointed more than, I just want to be clear. Like, it's just, I really wanted to like it. Like, yeah. Just because we're talking about the bomb going off scene, I was so fucking overwhelmed by that special effect because they talked it up so much of, like, this is mostly practical, and they did all these shots together, and like, I've seen video games do explosions.
Yeah, I knew nothing about it. It was fine for me. I liked the way they did it. I don't care about necessarily the verisimilitude or anything like that, like what it would actually look like. I just thought it was neat. In fact, because again, it sort of seemed more about their reactions to it than the explosion itself.
But that's the part that. I think it being not verisimilitude, like I don't care how accurate it is. It's just, it didn't seem big enough. Like, I mean, it's like I know it's not the point of the story, but it's like a pretty fucking big point of the story. Right. And I think the kind of, I don't know, you didn't get the sheer awe, the I have become death of it. It's just like, yeah, it's a pretty big explosion, but like, it, in context, you don't really see how big it is. And it's just kind of,
I think it sort of requires you to have some knowledge of it. You know what I mean? Like it expects you to have to like, yeah, it's the atomic bomb. You know what the atomic bomb is, right? Yeah. This movie is a lot more kind of like with Tenet, like it's a little bit more vibes based where it's, I think it's a lot more sort of experiential than Nolan's typical, like just very intricate plot. I'm going to explain all this to you. As some of his earlier movies. I mean, that's some of the, there's definitely still like exposition dumps and all that stuff there. But I feel like some of this just felt like this is what it would feel like to have this happen, rather than like really trying to capture the moment itself.
Yeah. I did like the kind of vibes part. We talked about like, you know, dudes hanging out movies. Uh-huh. Like, I kind of wish there was just more physicists talking about physics, to be honest. Like, I like that part. Like, I liked a lot of that beginning shit. And I also wanted to see a little bit more of, I know he's most of the movie, but I would like to see more of Oppenheimer as like, I'm not saying like banging more ladies or something, but like, I want to see him as a man a little bit more than we got. And maybe that's what he's trying to say. He's like, he's this indecipherable person or blah, blah, blah. But it's, then make a movie about someone else. I want him cipherable.
I think some of it is that like, it's hard to kind of tell, like, is how much of this stuff is like, as a put on of his like martyrdom about it? How much of this is sort of like positioning himself because of Strauss's things? And like, was he kind of a piece of shit? And I kind of like the way the movie like jumps through time with that. And there's certain things that like we maybe know a little bit of that we've seen before, but then we see it again in like in a different context. And then you're like, oh, okay, well maybe this, like when it's the whole thing about like, you find out a little bit later about an affair he's been having and you're like, what a piece of shit. And it sort of colors your opinions about other things, or at least mine anyway, your opinions about some of the other things he's done, specifically like what he's put his family through and like the whole thing with Florence Pugh or, you know, Tatlock. You're like, but you're still up to your old stuff, but it's not really focusing on that. And I think the problem with biopics in general, you know, you're trying to condense a whole life and then just like this tiny thing, and you end up leaving a lot out. And I think that was almost done by design here, where it's like, you are just getting these little tiny pieces of stuff, but you're flipping around, you know, you're flipping through time and all this stuff. So it's almost like quantum level looking at this guy's life.
Yeah. I think part of my issue with that, one, I just want more Oppenheimer, but like, Robert Downey Jr. is amazing in this. Like, his performance is terrific.
Yeah.
But I don't care about that plot line at all. Like, he's some guy that's just trying to get on the board of the something.
Well, he was on the board of the nuclear commission, whatever, and he was trying to get in a cabinet position. And he basically
cabinet. That's what I meant to say.
He was also trying to get the H-bomb going against Oppenheimer's wishes, and basically took these individual slights, these personal attacks, and like used it to sort of try to change history and like our technological development and stuff like that. And I thought that was kind of interesting. I think, cause again, that plays into the first part, and I forget who says this to Oppenheimer, but where they're like, they will just use you. It might be Einstein, where it's like, they'll get what they need out of you.
Yeah.
They'll get what they need out of you and then fuck you. And it's that aftermath, which I'm always interested in, is that like, well, then how do you go back to live? What's your life like after that? Because how do you go back to a regular life after all this? And to see him kind of get railroaded by these very small things, like this, the movie opens and he's living in Europe and is all upset because he's troubled by this secret universe he's starting to discover. And then his career gets sort of collapsed by men in a small room. And I really like that sort of dichotomy.
Yeah. I just want more of him. Like, I want, like, that beginning part where, like, he inexplicably wants to poison his teacher with the cyanide apple. I want that. Like, I want to know about Oppenheimer. Like, that's the guy I want to... The Robert Downey Jr. stuff, just going back there, it's not that I didn't like it, because I think his performance is good. I think, again, it's almost like the same on the Oppenheimer side. Is like, I want more of him as a character. He's like introduced and you're just like, well, he's obviously some schemer.
Mm.
And then he's just some schemer scheming. Like, I don't know, maybe I want to meet his wife or something. Like, give me a reason to be watching him. Like, he's just some guy, like, oh, wow, some guy in politics is being a schemer. Oh, fuck, what a riff. I don't say it's like some big, like, gotcha moment. I just, let me know him the tiniest bit.
See, I thought it did plenty to sort of let me know him. And I think being a schemer is sort of part of it. Like, sort of this more organized worldview that he has versus Oppenheimer's kind of just freeballing it with physics, which it felt a little bit more like in the beginning. Which, and I agree with you with the physics stuff. Like, it's very exciting, particularly when they're good at getting to Los Mesa, and it's like, let's get the team together montage. And
the other stuff's great.
Yeah, like that just momentum. But you know, like, you're coming together to make the worst thing mankind has ever done.
Yeah.
Yay. But you're still like, oh man, they're going to crack it. And it felt a little bit, it reminded me of way back in, I think it was episode 6, when we did Close Encounters of the Third Kind. That kind of like the joy of watching scientist people be excited about science.
Oh yeah.
That kind of carried me along, because you see these people in these moments, you know, are not all about coulda, not about shoulda, where they're just super excited about the stuff that they're doing. And like, can this actually work? Oh man, yes, it does. Look, do the math. Oh, it's great.
Yeah, the old, they only asked if they could, not if they should. You know, Jurassic Park style. That's a thing that they do really effectively, I think, is when they're putting the team together, yada yada, that they're all there for the science, and I think they buy the line of, well, this is going to end war.
Yeah.
I think they're truly just these naive fucking lab dorks that just don't understand human nature at all. And they're like, yeah, no, if somebody sees this fucking thing go off. And that's part of the reason I wanted the explosion to be a little bit more like impressive. Cause like, but yeah, when they see this go off and war's over, like no one's ever going to do it. It's like, I do like that kind of naivete and all of them sharing that delusion.
Yeah.
It's like the Joker 2. It's a folie à deux. It's twisted.
It is twisted. That's very twisted. It's twisted to bring that up, to make that comparison.
Sorry, I went to the at time of recording, people at home, the Joker 2 trailer just came out, I don't know, yesterday, 2 days ago, and it's sure is a trailer to Joker 2, and that's all I will say about it, because I'm sure we'll watch it on the show at some point.
Yeah, I haven't seen it. I saw someone on Twitter being like, look at this shot, it's so fucking amazing how she draws a smile and then he turns his head and the smile fits. It's so like, stupid. Are you fucking kidding me? Are you 12? But whatever.
Yeah. I mean, they might be.
They might be. That's true. That's true.
Not everyone's cool late 20s, early 30s guys like us.
Like us, who we've been for the last 10, 15 years.
Yeah, but I just started lying about it again, so I feel like we get a reader.
Nice. Well, you're on Twitch. You have to.
Oh, yeah. So that building, putting the team together and building the town is, like, I think, like, some of the strongest stuff. And I just love every new character that shows up. Like, oh, my God, it's Jack Quaid. Holy shit, it's Rami Malek. Like, there's so much good actor in
the. And, Josh Harnett showing up. I'm like, oh, I haven't seen that guy in forever. And
who is he?
He was.
He's Ernest Lawrence.
Yeah, that guy.
Who the fuck was Ernest Lawrence?
He was his lab partner guy, the guy that gets mad that he's starting to unionize the lab. Like, he's building the particle accelerator when he first comes to the.
That was Josh Hartnett?
That's Josh Hartnett.
Holy shit. Yeah. That didn't. Wow. I'm even looking at him now and like that. My brain isn't connecting that to Josh Hartnett.
It's like looking at old, like, pictures of young, or like I watched a movie Thrashin' recently that has very young Josh Brolin in it. You're like, that's not Josh Brolin. That's a wispy child.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. Which, speaking on those casting notes, they, like Christopher Nolan or whoever his casting director is, really nailed the wormy guy. Because Rami Malek's character and the one guy who's like the one military guy.
The guy that like looks like a Nazi.
This like under Matt Damon. Like just wormy shitheads. Yeah. Like, man, you got great cast for wormy dudes. Which I'm sure with, you know, a bunch of scientists in the desert, you're going to get a fair amount of wormy dudes in there.
Yeah. No, and the their casting of the science dorks really work. Like that one dude, I think it's Rabbi, the guy that speaks with the Russian accent, the one that's working in the H-bomb.
Oh, that is Benny Safdie, one of the directors of Uncut Gems.
It is such a perfect, like, he just looks at, he's got those like big puffy dork lips. Mm-hmm. Like, he's just, it's not that, I think audience knows what I'm saying. I wasn't like shaming his lips, but it's just like, it's this perfect, like.
The way he presents
just,
himself.
You work in a lab. Like, you just look like you're in a lab.
Yeah. He's really great. I liked him in Licorice Pizza that we watched, and he's really good in The Curse. He's just a piece of shit in that show, but he's very, very good.
What's The Curse?
It's that I think it's on Paramount. It's with Nathan Fielder and Emma Stone.
Oh, yeah. Gotcha.
One weakness of Christopher Nolan's, which is definitely present in this movie, is instead of putting Tom Hardy in a mask and making him unintelligible, it's making Kenneth Branagh speak in a silly accent.
Yeah.
And he does so again here as the aforementioned Niels Bohr. But still, it's nice to see that guy.
I think he's... I like Kenneth Branagh in a... you're just inherently a silly person way. Mm-hmm. That like, that kind of works for me for Niels Bohr. Like it just, it's yeah, but he's not, he's better behind the camera. Like his work with Thor. That's Kenneth Branagh, right?
Yep. That the first one was indeed Kenneth Branagh.
Look at me knowing something about movies.
And on the character actor, tip, I'll talk about them. David Krumholtz is, Robbie, his buddy Robbie.
Yes.
Love that guy. And I just like, I just wanted to hang out with that character a ton.
Yeah. And I also didn't realize that was Florence Pugh who played Gene Tatlock.
I thought that relationship was fascinating.
Yes.
And I thought the way they handled it very well. Because again, it's very mercurial in how it like leaps between that and whatever. And every interaction they have is sort of confusing and upsetting, but you still get understand the attraction there. And it's like, well, we've all been in like relationships in our teens or 20s or whatever that are just like passionate, but also insane.
Yeah.
Like that, you totally feel that. When she's like, don't bring me flowers, I hate you. And he's like, well, I love you, I'm going to bring you some flowers. And it's... you get what's going on there. And they're like sort of what that ends up leading to and all that I thought was very interesting. I thought the performances were great. She, again, was fantastic.
I just realized that Gödel in this is James Urbaniak. I didn't put that together.
Yeah, yeah. There's a tiny little scene with him, and I love that actor. So that was another, like, a fun little jump scare, seeing that guy.
Yeah, the cast in this is kind of incredible. People like working with the
Nullister?
Whatever his name is. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, even Jason Clark as the horrible prosecuting guy. It's like just a piece of shit. I really liked him.
Oh, the guy in the closed room, the guy that like is a jerk. Yeah, 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 yeah. He was really good. And Casey Affleck sighting, which is always nice because I like abusers in my films.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's very fitting for him to play that role, and it's also reminded me a lot of his performance in The Killer Inside Me, which is a pretty decent adaptation of the Jim Thompson novel.
I also just realized he did Get in Trouble, right? That is Casey Affleck.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Good. I just said that, like, oh, shit. I might be getting him confused with another guy, because there's, like, four guys that look exactly like that.
Mm-hmm. But him being, like, the kind of piece of shit he was playing was very impressive.
Yeah, I mean, I just, how about we just hire someone that hasn't?
Well, there's that, yeah. There's that little element to it.
Like, how about not give millions of dollars to,
mm-hmm.
you know.
But we need, how else are you going to open this movie without Casey Affleck, without that name?
That is true. I'm surprised Ben Affleck isn't in this. I feel like Ben Affleck would fit in this movie.
Yeah, I can see. Yeah, I can definitely see that. But I mean, I guess maybe they have a one Affleck per picture. All right, I got that. Maybe he was too busy making The Accountant 2.
Yeah, I mean, this movie, I guess, is important or whatever, but The Accountant 2, talk about that's important.
That's important.
That's, yeah, that's like, forget it. I was gonna say that's like Jack Reacher season 2 important.
Yeah,
absolutely. You know, just like dad watches.
Yeah, which I mean, this could have easily have been a dad movie. I feel like this the kind, and I don't mean this in any kind of offensive way, but like the kind of movie you want to see, that you wanted this to be, I think would be very much a dad movie. Like a little bit more like focused on him and specifically that, like it just would like more of a straightforward biopic perhaps, but like it's got that World War II element into it and like regrets looking back at your life. That seems daddish. Overcoming stuff and being a rebel seems like a dad movie.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I want. I just want everything to be a dad movie.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a big dad kind of guy, dad, you know, cause I got kids and whatever.
Yeah.
Oh wait, I'm not supposed to talk about that on the show. Look, I'm building my character as we go. When I was but a wee lad, knee-high to grasshopper, his grandmother used to say, just a wee little one.
Mm-hmm.
I remember telling my friends how when they first set off the atomic bomb, they thought that it might ignite the atmosphere and kill the entire world. This isn't like a joke. I mean, this is deep insight into how I ended up like this.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember that's like one of my earliest memories is somebody telling me about this or watching a show, reading a book or something. And that has stuck with me my whole life. And I'm so glad they brought it up in this because that is fucking terrifying. That is like I think it's one of the better character moments where Damon's like, hey, that guy made the joke about the, you know, lighting the atmosphere on fire. And he's like, oh, yeah, early on, we thought we were going to destroy the whole planet or whatever. And he's like, there was a chance of that. He's like, well, it's non-zero, basically zero chance. Yeah. And it's like, wait, so there's a chance. Like, just like, what the fuck? And Damon's performance there is like, oh, that's, I spent like years of my life and $2 billion of American money on this project. And I'm just now finding out that there's a chance it ends all life on Earth. Like, mm-hmm. Fuck.
Well, see, and I like that aspect of it too. That play between the, like, you know, here's this, we're breaking crazy new ground in physics and we're like, we're discovering all this stuff and this is so cool, but it's ultimately like at the service of these petty tyrants and whatever, like the meeting with Truman is just really upsetting.
Oh yeah.
Which is funny. So it's Gary Oldman, which means he's played Truman and,
Is that Gary Oldman?
That's Gary Oldman.
Oh,
he's played Truman and Winston Churchill. Now he just needs to play Stalin and get the, guess it'd be FDR though, really. But that he was all ready to be like, ah, Oppenheimer, America, great, right? And Oppenheimer's like, we should give the ranch back to the Native Americans there. And he's like, oh, you're a pussy. I hate you.
Yeah, yeah. So Truman, I'm not good with presidents. Is he the one that like used to like, is he like the big dick guy? Not
no,
that
that's
he has big dick.
Like, that's LBJ.
That's LBJ. I know he's like, that's somewhere around that time though,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, that's it.
I mean, I don't know much about Truman's dick, but I just like.
No, no, but I mean, like, he like famously used to like as a power move, just whip his dick out. Apparently, and just be a fucking scumbag. Okay. I knew it was like one of those guys around there because that German guy in this movie seems like a real asshole.
Yeah.
Like real son of a bitch. Yeah.
And the fact, yeah, the fact that he's like, yeah, I dropped it. Why do you care? And it's like,
yeah.
I mean, on one hand, it's like, okay, well, fair point. But like, yeah, I didn't want to murder thousands of people. Yeah. Turns out.
Well, that's the, you know, that's a good, not to fall into this movie's trap and have the conversation. But there is a legitimate theory, and like legitimate, I mean, like war historians agree that dropping the bomb saved in upwards of a million lives because there would be a land invasion. And it's an interesting thing because it's like, well, this is objectively horrible, but the war ended real quick and we lost a fuckload of people on the land war in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Like, was it the moral thing? Like, I mean, like,
I think that's fascinating thing is that not, and it's something like, cause I don't know that much, or I've forgotten a lot about this era in history, and where it's like, we initially did this to prevent the Germans to do it from doing it. And then the German, we beat them. And they're like, well, we better keep doing it.
Yeah.
I thought that was interesting. And because particularly that seemed like the whole impetus for so much of this is that, like, you know, these are the worst people in the world and they're starting it. So we have to make sure that they don't get it. And then, well, the worst people in the world are gone, but we better still do this just in case. Because people are still doing, like, we don't want to get behind the Russians.
Yeah. I mean, that's the gross part. The bombing of Japan, I'm not like justifying it, just to be clear, people at home. It just, I think it's an interesting thought experiment of like, you know, it's like a trolley car thing where like a land war in the Pacific would have cost, you know, 2 million lives or whatever. And dropping the bombs cost, you know, 200,000. Where it's like, but you still blew up citizens. Yeah, it's like,
There's a really good movie by, I think it's Shohei Imamura called Black Rain, not the Michael Douglas one. And it's basically about like people's lives after the bomb was dropped. And basically any character you meet, they've got cancer. It's really a fucking bummer, but it's a very good movie. And so I couldn't help but think about that during this.
As a kind of moral person, as the hero of the story, I would say that for a trolley car problem, what I would do is jump out and just stop it with my feet, like kind of Spider-Man style. And then just everybody gets to live.
No, I think that's the best. That's the,
because I'm just saying, if I were in those planes, I'm just saying, you know, they wouldn't be hitting any buildings.
Right.
You know.
Thank you.
Yeah. For my service.
Yes.
Finally, my false valor or stolen valor is coming through. Is that what it's called? Stolen valor.
Yeah. Stolen valor. Yeah. Yeah. If only Marky Mark would have stopped Oppenheimer.
But, you know. So here's the other interesting part about the conversation that I'm trying to force. I mean, they were naive as shit saying this ends war, right?
Mm-hmm.
We haven't dropped another one.
Right.
70 years ago, 80 years, like, I mean, I'm not saying that's right, but like, there's a bit of an argument made there. Like, when it did, like, we dropped two and that was it. Like, that's, I mean, we've been practicing on, you know, underground places and the Bikini Atoll, but like, for the most part, just kind of, yeah, we dropped one. So we're like, yeah, maybe we don't do that again.
Right. But that hasn't stopped war. I mean,
oh, no, I'm not saying stop the war. I'm just saying it's kind of remarkable that like that one aspect more of like, they'll see how horrible it is and this will stop war. But it did stop nuclear war.
Well, it didn't. I mean, it certainly, nuclear war hasn't happened, but there was certainly an arms race about it. You know.
Oh, yeah. But I mean, the fact that I'm just kind of surprised it hasn't happened is really what I'm going with here. Like, I mean, we dropped those in the fucking 40s. It's almost the 40s again. And we haven't had another one.
Well, it kind of makes you wonder.
Hey, like, wait, what's that bright light outside my house?
Flash. What do they do with old nuclear weapons? Are they still good? Like, when how?
No, they do go bad after a while. They're saying one of the things about the whole Putin being like a, you know, straw kind of paper tiger. That's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
That I think the estimate is something like 70% of the nuclear stockpile is probably bad at this point because it needs regular upkeep. Like the way the explosion things, you know, they talk about that implosion wave that sets it off or whatever. Apparently those go bad. So, like, it comes to the point that it's just, like, they've just got a whole shitload of duds. That they have, like, you know, many thousands of warheads. So, like, even 30% is going to – I mean, the world's over. But, you know, I'm just saying, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just saying we'd kick their ass. Like,
we would end the world so much better and faster than they would.
And we'd be ahead in the big stick race or whatever that shit from Dr. Strangelove is. You know, when they're talking about
that. Yeah. But I do – I did like, again, like, them figuring all that, like, you know, going back to the building a team, getting a team together. But, like, they're figuring, like, what if we shot a thing into it and do that? Oh, that's great. What if we did this?
Yeah.
And then the hydrogen bomb that Oppenheimer's like, no. But I think some of that probably came from the seeing what the – the other bomb did. It was like, this is why do more? Why make it even worse than what I've already done? But I like that also that without jumping too far ahead, kind of more towards the end of the movie, about how like it becomes this thing, kind of going off of what Einstein said about like them using you and then moving on. And there's notes to this at the beginning when he sees Einstein, when he first meets Strauss and he sees Einstein at the pond. He's like, I'm surprised you didn't involve him in the Manhattan Project. And he was like, yeah, his paper was old by that point. Like he broke ground like in his time.
Yeah.
That stuff moved on from Oppenheimer, and that like by the end they're all just like, yeah, here's your gold watch and plaque. Good job, buddy. And then it doesn't matter. Like, cause some of it does feel like he's sort of, because people reference, you hear a lot of people talking about him, probably more so than you see some of the stuff that they accuse him of or whatever. Like you see little glimpses of it, but like the whole argument of him like trying to position himself as this sort of Sphinx of the atom, I think they kind of gloss over that's kind of like told to you, but then like you see the way he interacts with other people, and you can see where that comes from towards the end when he's getting that award. This is not so much an acknowledgement as much as it is like a final casting off of, yeah, we're done with you. We've done all this now. And
yeah,
that greatness like used up for what purpose and then used up, I think is interesting.
That was the part I liked about the kind of, you know, third act of the movie. Not that it's traditional acts, but the end of the movie.
Yeah.
Is after the bomb drops and him just like immediately becoming irrelevant to the discussion around the bomb.
Mm-hmm.
Like you did your job, you know, your money's on the table, go fuck off. And that when they give the kind of lost in translation moment, if they actually show what Einstein said to him, which has been this thread through the whole movie, and it's like, yeah, dude, they're gonna say you're pretty, they're gonna fuck you, and then they're gonna be gone the next day, and it's like exactly what happened.
But I also like that what seems like this personal slight at the beginning to Strauss, that he somehow like poisoned the well against Strauss, is really just them talking about like, oh fuck, the world that we fucked up, the world, man, this sucks. Yeah, like, this is all gonna be bad. And then Strauss is like, what is this about me? Are you guys talking about me? And that's very identifiable to me.
Well, that's also the interesting thing there is the anti-Semitism in the movie. Not that the movie's being anti-Semitic, but like he's Strauss,
mm-hmm.
but he says it's Strauss.
Yeah.
Like, but that's Einstein and Oppenheimer. Like, mm-hmm. these are, you know, as openly Jewish as you can be in the, you know, in that time. But then, you know, it's Strauss. It's very like, no. It's a southern pronunciation.
Yeah. And I mean, I can, and Robbie brings that up when they're on the train. He's, because like, you're starting to feel like maybe, because this is like, you know, in the 30s or whatever. So you're starting to think like, maybe this isn't, you're not feeling welcome here anymore.
Yeah. I mean, have they tried not being Jewish?
I don't know. I don't know if you can do that.
I think you can.
I mean, certainly you could stop practicing, but I think, I don't know that Hitler was that picky. He was like, oh, well, all right. You've seen the error of your ways. I'll let you go.
Well, when Hitler saw his kid freeze that cup of coffee, I'm getting Jewish people and X-Men confused.
Mm-hmm. That Sorry. Happened. Well, I mean, Magneto was in the Holocaust.
Yeah, that's true.
Canonical.
That was tasteless. I mean, yeah, I like those movies, but that was tasteless. You know, that didn't need to be in those movies.
Yeah, it's one of those. I mean, I think First Class kind of handled it decently, where like he got pulled out as soon as they saw that he was in that, and then like tortured and made this thing. So that works a little bit better. But I always feel weird about that. Like, there, speaking of trailers that came out, I saw there was a trailer for Ty West's Maxine, which is the third in his X, Pearl, and then this trilogy with what's her butt? No eyebrows lady. With Mia Goth.
And does Mia Goth not have eyebrows?
No.
Look up a photo of her. I'm going to look up a picture of Mia Goth.
Yeah. No, we're going to take a break. And I mean, if she does, they're very, very light.
I don't really know what Mia Goth looks like. Oh yeah, no, she's got like no eyebrows. Oh, it's actually, now that's all I can see.
And I always like, I like roles where they lean into that. And I think that's great. But there's a thing like, so it's the 80s now and she's in Hollywood and they keep making reference to the Night Stalker. And I was like, that's a real guy. That's a real person that did things. And that kind of feels gross. But whatever.
You know, interesting story about her. That's how I introduced myself to girls at the club when I was in high school.
Mia Goth. Nice.
Mia Goth.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you know.
I like that you started laughing before I even finished the joke, by the way. That made me happy of like our relationship and how dumb that was.
Yeah. You know, I think I just figured out that the wormy guy, the shitty, like you said, looks like a Nazi that was working under.
Yeah, yeah.
That is Dane DeHaan, otherwise known as Valerian.
Is that really Dane DeHaan? No,
that's
shit.
Dane DeHaan.
Wow, because, you know, him,
I'm like,
I
clearly do not remember what Valerian looked like, because he did not look like that guy.
Well, that was quite a few years ago at this point, but because him and Han Solo have similar vibe, that them being in this is kind of amazing.
Oh, sure. Yeah, he plays kind of warmer too. I just love Alden Ehrenreich and Hail Caesar so much.
Alden Ehrenreich, I'm going to remember his name eventually. Let's face it, I'm not.
Like, you know, speaking of the aftermath, just the way, technically, the way it was done, when he's giving the sort of like victory speech.
Yes, that was great.
The thing, and he starts, you know, it starts being the flashing, and you start seeing that woman, like her skin melting, whatever. But the effect they did were like, he's in focus, but behind him is like out of focus, but also like super shaky. Put you in that sort of mind headspace very, very well.
And his speech is great because you see he's just trying to get the crowd riled up, and he's just like, I just wish we could have blown up Germany with it. Like, it's almost like he's just saying shit he doesn't believe because he's like kind of, what's the phrase? He's high on his own supply at this point. And I thought that was really good when he steps on the kind of like desiccated kind of Pompeii style, you know, charcoal baby. Oof, that's some powerful visual there. I'll give it to him.
I really have to, I mean, it's not, you know, I'm sure Chris Roland had something to do with it too, but Jennifer Lame, if I'm saying that last name right, unless it's LeMay, was the editor on this, I thought did a fantastic job. Montage sort of in general to me anymore, like when you have this like montage of stuff with this powerful music underneath, like that's a power company. You know what I mean? Like I've seen so many commercials with that, or that like,
Gotcha.
You know, this is Exxon Mobil. You know, that it's drained so much out of it. But like when it's done right, it's like, oh, okay, cool. You're able to actually like nail this and give me the. It doesn't feel trite or forced. I thought everything was put together very, very well. Same thing with I feel like Oppenheimer's stuff was a lot more fluid, where Strauss's stuff was a lot more sort of like steady camera in one place. Here you go.
Yeah, that was one of the things I liked about the Oppenheimer side of it. Like actually watching him, because the movie's called Oppenheimer and you can't say things like that. But watching Robert, I can call him that, we're friends. Mm-hmm. That like him kind of tripping out, I like the kind of first person narrative view of this, of like, you know, just him just seeing stuff. And I don't know, I thought that was like really effective, like especially like, not especially, but that early on stuff where he sees the subatomic world and it's just like this vibrating weird, like it almost looks like you've got eye floaters, like it's it's really well done.
Or when he's sitting there in like, and he's just throwing glasses into the corner of the room.
Yeah
like you have to be a certain kind of crazy, which I think this movie posits, like, yeah, if you're the right kind of crazy, you can get stuff done.
Yeah. Did I ever tell you, this is just about throwing glasses, but did I ever tell you about my lowest moment in my life?
Yeah, I've been on the podcast with you.
The second lowest moment, I was like having this really bad night, violently depressed. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to cry, I want to shoot myself, everything's bad. I'm drinking a glass of wine out of like this round cup without a stem. Like, I don't know what the kind of cup you call that.
A glass?
And I finished it, and I got it in my hand, I'm like, fuck this, and I just like, I threw it at my wall as hard as I could. It hits the corner of the wall perfectly. Bounces to the other corner, bounces and lands on my bed. All there is a scuff from the paint on it. And I had this pause, and like the depression lifted immediately. I'm like, I can't even break a fucking glass dramatically properly. Yeah. Like I literally just threw it as hard as I could. And I think I just put the perfect amount of spin, and it just like absorbed, bounce, lands on my bed. And it's like, this is like, and I was like, I actually kind of felt better. I was like, I cannot believe that just fucking happened.
Yeah. And then you went on to build a different kind of bomb, a super atomic.
Yeah, John Alex Eight stuff.
John Alex Eight stuff. Like, wait,
boom,
a minute.
In our
what
face.
About a podcast?
Yeah.
Speaking of depression, oh man, the way that Gene Tatlock sort of ends things was brutal.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know that story at all, but like, wow. That is commitment. That is what a way to go.
So admit, I think I missed something in that scene. She just took a bottle of pills, right? And then drowned herself?
And then drowned herself. Like that to me is wild, like that.
So I was taking a note, and I thought I saw a hand on her head at one point. Did that
happen? It was her hands on
her
head.
It was her hands. I couldn't tell if it was like they were hinting that she was removed from the situation governmentally.
Yeah, no. That was all just her. Which I mean, Matt Damon makes that joke earlier about like, now
yes.
We'll have to get
Well, that's what I thought. Maybe that was the reference. Sorry. I just totally talked over you.
No.
Okay. That's the problem with like being friends is like sometimes I'll be like, oh, we can just talk at the same time. It's like, no, we can't. We're talking to an audience. So, like, I can't do this.
Yeah, but I can, you know, you can split it up in editing. It's fine.
Yeah.
I do it all the time.
Yeah, her whole character is not going to do Alex's backstory theater, but like I grew up like I love the Beats and that was like a big thing in my life. And she just reminded me of that kind of era. Mm-hmm. And I just like, I'm not saying I know her, but it's like, I kind of know her. And it's like, I really like, I don't know. There was just something about that character. It was just like, I feel you like that just, yeah. And then she goes out dirty, you know, not dirty, you know, whatever. It's, you know, it's a disease. She fell for it, but like, it's just, it's rough.
It's rough. And I think I've seen some complaints about criticisms about like women in Nolan movies generally are sort of given short shrift. And I think that's a fair in complaint, particularly when looking at his work overall. But I think particularly in this one, since you're really sort of consigned to these points of view of like these, like mainly Oppenheimer and like a little bit, you know, Strauss or whatever, that like you're sort of witnessing them how they see them.
Yeah.
It fits a pattern, certainly, but I didn't necessarily want to knock the movie for it. I like the little touches where like the one character, it might actually be Emily Blunt's character, I don't recall, who's like, well, I was a physicist, but now I'm a housewife. That's so they don't have that at MIT. Or like the one woman at the lab, like we be careful. We don't know what this is going to do to a woman's reproductive system. She's like, we don't know what it's going to do to yours. Who gives a shit?
Yeah, like it says, she's mine are more protective than yours. And just like debating, like, yeah, you got dangly bits, dude. Mine behind a.
Well, I mean that was always such like an excuse for everything. Like that, women can't be cyclists because their ovaries will fall out. Or like there's that picture. It's not even that long. I want to say it's like in the 70s of those people like trying to tackle a woman in the doing like the Boston Marathon or New York City Marathon.
Yeah,
or something
like 100%.
Like, oh, you're hurting yourself.
For a movie that's about primarily men, I actually think some of the women really showed up as best they could. Like, I thought Jean Tatlock felt like a full character. Mm-hmm. And I know it's, you know, the old trope of my girlfriend killed herself thing, but like, I felt like I knew her a bit. But like, I would say like his wife, Emily Blunt, is a fucking rock star in this.
She's really
good. She brings so much to it. And when she goes into the questioning room or whatever, and just fucking runs over that asshole was so satisfying. You're like, this is a force of nature that just walked in there. She's like, oh, I just found out that like my husband's been cheating more than I thought he was. Mm-hmm. I'm a mess. I kind of hate this. I got shackled with children I didn't want. But then she just shows up and she's just like, no, I don't like your question. I don't like the way that's phrased. That just like, oh, that was so fucking good.
Well, and I think some of that, like some of the stuff that might, and I don't know how much is on the page or isn't, but I think particularly like her performance brought a lot to that character as well, because particularly at the beginning when it's like they get married, she's like, ah, you're never around and I'm stuck with the kids and I'm a drunk, and kind of felt like, oh, this is going to be this very sort of rote, this thing we've seen before in other movies, or, you know, not that someone's real life is a trope, but you know what I mean? And so when she's sort of become something else outside of that, like when she's telling him, like when he's all upset about Jean Tatlock dying and she's like, you don't get to commit the sin and then make us feel bad that you did it.
That was like, awesome. Yeah.
Which, I mean, it certainly works in a much larger context as well. And just like her sort of like stand by your man, but also I'm pissed at you. Like, and like the little tell when she like is so upset leaving that inquiry, she drops a purse and that the flask falls out. That's still going on, and a lot of subtlety in this movie, because you got for as many moving pieces as it is, I feel like the movie does a pretty decent job of not like, get it.
Well, that's what I liked about her not kind of responding to being a mother. They don't hang a hat on it. It's just literally she's just sitting there drinking. The kid's screaming. He's like, shouldn't you take care of that? She's like, I've been taking care of her whole fucking day. And he's like, yeah, I'm just going to go drop it off at my buddy's house. Like, I shouldn't call a child it, but like, I'm going to drop the chicken because this is a bad scene. And that's horrible of him, because like, you know, you can take care of the kid too. Like, significant amount of those chromosomes are yours, bro. But I like how they didn't they didn't explain it. They didn't go, well, I used to be a blah, 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 or I'm feeling it. Just literally, you see one scene of just she's not dealing with it well. And then you never see it resolved. It's just later, she's just a mom of two kids.
Yeah. It just tells you a little bit about him, that his solution was like, I mean, just get this fucking thing out of here because I'm not changing. So whatever, I'll eliminate this problem, which is kind of cold and uncaring in its own way.
Yeah. Hey, how about you physics up a fucking Johnny hat, all right? The other part that I really liked about like kind of the tail end of the movie is an actor who I don't particularly care for, Rami Malek. I liked him in Mr. Robot. I haven't liked him in anything else. The way he churns in the deposition or whatever, yeah. where he, like they, everybody thinks he's going to back up Straws and he's like, no. And it's just completely just fucks him publicly. And I enjoyed that greatly. And I think Rami Malek pulled it off really well. And Robert Downey Jr. I know I've been effusive about Robert Downey Jr., but seriously,
he's like really good.
Yeah, because he used to be a good actor, then got into drugs, and then was in the MCU. And it's like, oh, cool, you get to be a good actor again. Like,
yeah,
I mean, he wasn't good in the MCU, but like, it's nice to see him like doing actual acting.
Yeah, well, yeah, he also gets sort of like railroaded to like be this kind of personality. Like, be, you know, you're good. He's good at it because I mean, even I thought he was good in Zodiac, but he's still kind of a similar kind of like sardonic kind of character. And to see him be not that, and really just nail it is great. Yeah, because I really enjoyed his performance in it a lot. And I'm a huge fan of stories about like the Prestige, for example, speaking of Nolan, of like two men across time hating each other. Like, I'm always a fan of that because, I mean, again, it's that like these huge mysteries of the universe like boil down to like, I fucking hate this dude. Like, it makes me very happy.
Yeah.
Makes you feel like a big man that my pettiness is reflected in film.
Oh yeah. No. You being an ass is universal, John. You're part of a continuous grouping from the first man that ever went, that guy's got a nicer house than me. Yeah. So right now.
Yep. Pretty haters all.
Yes.
We are eternal.
Hey, you know, without haters, you don't win wars. If you don't win wars, you don't bed the pretty ladies, and we don't end up in America. Right. So I'm saying, John, you being an asshole is American.
That's very American. It's no other country has assholes like America has assholes.
Oh, we've got the best assholes. We got the brightest assholes. we got the bleachiest, wonderfulest assholes.
Yeah. Assholes. That's true. I mean,
every American could be a porn star with how bleachy clean their assholes are because of our asshole lineage.
That should be our new flag. It's just a bleached asshole.
Yeah, that should be on the cover of Trump's Bible.
It's so great. It's the cleanest asshole you've ever seen.
Yeah. Yeah, I really liked how the bookend on this is Einstein and Oppenheimer getting together at the lake and finally explaining what that is and like how... Because it's before all of it went down, and Einstein, because, you know, pretty bright guy, just fucking forecasted the whole thing. And I thought it was a really nice reveal. And also, like, at the timing of the Straws thing, him falling apart, and also realizing, like, oh, it's not only did you get your ass handed to you in front of the country, you're, like, one of your pillars of hatred towards this guy is nothing. Like, it literally wasn't about you.
Yeah, and I think... That, you know, it's tough to get a Christopher Nolan movie that's not about time in some fashion. And I think this works. He plays that well here. It's not like I really enjoyed Dunkirk and seeing Dunkirk in the theater. I haven't seen it since then. But the whole like, well, this is 2 weeks. This is a day. This whatever felt a little gimmicky at the time. And so I think this is a little bit more masterful use of that, of playing around with time, of seeing little bits here and there. And then like how. This bit, coming back to this bit, how this bit has changed now, that kind of stuff. That again, like sort of operating on a quantum level of sorts, I thought was really good.
Or a meta level, because you know who came up with the theory of relativity? Mr. Albert James Einstein.
Never heard of him.
He was in that movie
Oppenheimer?
Where I can't no where Yahoo Serious. I couldn't think of his name. I'm like Carrot Top. No, fuck.
No, there was a part of me, like for a split second, I'm not gonna lie, there was a part of me when they're like, well, they split an atom. I'm like, yeah, in Australia, he split the beer atom.
I kept like, thinking of, God damn. I don't remember who was in it. I think it might be Meg Ryan. Remember those movies? I think Walter Matthau plays Einstein. IQ.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Fred Trapezi, Walter Matthau, Tim Robbins. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think Walter Matthau's dead, but he should have been in this as Einstein.
That would have been great. Yeah. Nice
deep,
callback.
Deep fake Walter Matthau.
Yeah. Little hat Einstein. Tip. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I don't really have much else on the movie.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, like, it's a big, complex movie. I'm super bummed I did not see it in IMAX. Because, I mean...
I'm a little bit, too, but...
It's the sound would be amazing. There's certainly some vast, amazing landscapes like that. But so much of this movie is just the human face big.
Yeah.
And that would have been very cool to see.
I also wouldn't mind seeing... No, I'm not going to say that. I was gonna objectify. I couldn't decide if I was gonna objectify Cillian Murphy or Florence Pugh. And I'm like, ah, fuck it. I've already done that enough on the show. We're good.
There are some versions of it where like they put a black dress on her in that scene.
Really?
Yeah. Like, it's like to get around like censored boards or whatever. It's like, I don't know. Have you ever seen those, like, when Showgirls is on TV and on like TNT and like they've drawn like fake bras onto all the people in the background?
Yeah.
It's very, very funny.
The purity nonsense of like, oh my God, areola! I'm getting the vapors. Maybe this is the ace coming out of me, but just like calm down. It's a fucking topless woman. It's not a fucking big deal. But I think I was probably gonna go Killian Murphy, but at no point, because we're stopping talking about this. I was gonna bring up his Irish ball sack.
Audience, like we've stopped the recording, but Alex has got out a whiteboard and just drew a dong on it and circled it a few times.
This is what I like to call his Irish danglers. Here. Now, over here, I'm going to refer to as his uncut knob. Is a British phrase, but, you know, they took over Ireland. There's a whole thing. Now,
we'll put the PowerPoint presentation in the show notes.
Now, if you look, when he crosses his legs, you will see what I would like to call his Peaky Blinders, which in this...
I'm glad it took us this long to make a Peaky Blinders reference, though. Way to go.
Also, at one point, when his giant pants that are usually pulled up his nipples go down low, you can see his scarecrow.
Oh, there you go.
I meant his pubic hair.
Okay. I was like, I want to ask what that means, but I honestly don't want to know.
I wanted to save you from asking, and I just thought I'd tell you.
Thank you. In conclusion,
you're
like Oppenheimer in that way. You thought you were doing good, and it was way, way worse than you anticipated.
And I feel like I am the genius of this generation.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, given that this generation is like Andrew Tate and that little Nazi black-haired kid. What's his name? Ben Shapiro?
Yeah.
I feel like I actually probably could be the genius of our generation if we very carefully choose who we're defining our generation by.
Yeah, well, you need to become one of those debate me nerds. That'd be a fun.
Yeah, I'll debate Destiny. It'll be great.
Yeah.
The movie's fine. I liked it, but it's not. I think it was just overblown. Just the acting is really good, and I think it kind of. The acting puts enough varnish on a cohesive enough movie that it, you know, I don't know. It should win acting awards, shouldn't win any movie making awards.
Maybe
editing and stuff, but I mean like script writing and like, you know, full best picture stuff. It's just, it's not enough for me. I maybe think like, I might just not be a Nolan guy. Like even the movie I like the most of his, I don't even know which one it is. It's still like, yeah, that's pretty good.
This made me go like this might be my favorite Nolan movie. Like Tenet was fun. Some of it's like kind of like puzzle box stuff I got a little tired of, but I do think like he makes some neat stuff or at least interesting. But this was like, oh crap, this is actually like a really good movie. And I look forward to seeing some more from him about that. Wasn't there some rumor about him like wanting to do The Prisoner or something? I would totally watch that if he
The Prisoner?
The TV show, the Patrick McGoohan.
Oh, that's what I was thinking. Oh, okay.
Yeah. I don't know if I could be misremembering that, but I really liked it. I dug it. I'm looking forward to watching it again.
Yeah, I don't think I'm ever going to really revisit it. There are some scenes that I'm looking forward to scenes being taken out of context and put on TikTok. Okay. Is really what I think that's the best way
to
watch
this movie. Scene, just the with his Peaky Blinders.
Don't be gross, John. That's my job. I wanted Jack Quaid playing the bongos.
How about this? How about it's him standing there, right? It's like the tower where they drop the bomb from in the test, but it's him standing over it, and it's actually his testicles that drop off and fall to the ground and cause the explosion.
I mean, I feel like now you're speaking my language. We can Naked Gun this thing, make it that way. By the way, R.I.P. Orange Julius Simpson, just up in heaven with your girl. And again, reunited with Ron, finally, you're at rest and back with your loved ones.
Did you see the thing? Like one of the Zucker brothers posted about it.
Oh, is that true?
Was like, yeah, it was like his murder was like his acting. Like he got away with it, but no one believed him.
Yeah, that's funny.
Yeah, it was.
That's good. I thought he was going to support him. Yeah.
No. I mean, fair point, but no.
You know, technically, he was found not guilty. So
right. But anyway, no one believed him. He got away.
If this makes it into the final edit, I didn't know him. O.J. Simpson died today, and he's famous for murdering people.
Yep. Yeah. I also like the only really good joke I saw about it was someone saying that like it's a crime that Norm MacDonald isn't around today for this day.
I had that exact thought.
And then
thought.
In Norm MacDonald's voice, you know what else was a crime? O.J. Simpson's murders.
On the note of enjoying things. This is a legitimate segue. John, is there anything that you've enjoyed recently that you would like to share with the audience?
Yes, actually, two movies I saw this past week that I very much enjoyed. One of which is A Matter of Life and Depth. A Matter of Life and Death.
A Matter of Life and Depth, the story of Johnny Depp. John is a big Depp head.
His struggle against these horrendous allegations that are
going through. And that harpy Amber Heard.
It's an old Michael Powell, Eric Pressburger movie with David Niven. Whereas like he is supposed to, he like dies in World War II, but while his plane is crashing, he like is talking to a radio operator and like falls in love with her, ends up surviving the crash, but he was supposed to have died and gone to heaven. And so heaven is trying to like get him back. So he like starts a whole trial about how I fell in love after I was dead. So I deserve to be back on Earth. But it's a gorgeous movie. It is so colorful and pretty and just like, they don't make pictures like this anymore.
Yeah, that sounds pretty cool, actually.
Yeah, it's a little corny because it's, you know, it's like a 1940s or 1946. But so it's a little corny in places, but I still really enjoyed it. It's very lush. And then I just watched today Love Lies Bleeding with Kristen Stewart and Ed Harris and whatever. Yeah. Really good. Someone on Twitter had described it as Mandy for lesbians. 100% disagree. It's not that stylish, or at least stylish in that way, but it's still very stylish and it's really good. Like it's a real solid noir. I thought all the performances were great. Goes in places I did not expect. Big thumbs up for me.
Let me just ask you a quick question. You see your Twilights?
Whose?
The woman from Twilight.
Robert Pattinson?
Got him.
This is 2011, baby. Boom.
Yeah.
Taking down Twilight. Yeah, Kristen Stewart's in it. Yes, there's several love scenes.
You see your Twilights?
Yes.
Tell me about it.
No, you got to go see the movie for yourself.
Yeah, I don't
Mr. Asexual.
Yeah, no.
Wait, areolas, man.
I literally just said that because we were doing the Peaky Blinders thing before. And I'm like, Twilight's actually would be a funny term for boobs. So I'm just going to go with it.
Or very upsetting. Yeah, one of those.
We've met, right? Alex, the fine line between very upsetting and funny. This would be my fucking tombstone.
Yeah, those are my recommendations. How about you? What do you got?
I have what I'm going to call the most embarrassing recommendation I've ever brought to the show. And that's saying something. And I'm not really recommending it. This is more like a confession. I got into Chicago Med, that okay. Dick Wolf show. I really like Oliver Platt in it. I don't really care about the show. It's just he's doing really interesting things with the character. And I like watching. So, like, I actually find myself fast forward. There's a couple characters that I like actively don't give a shit about. Like, to the point that, like, I've missed plot points because I just don't watch the scenes they're in. But Oliver Platt's so good in it. I can't even describe it. It's like he's like this, he plays a psychiatrist. He's like the lead psychiatrist in Chicago Medicine Hospital, whatever. But like, he's like playing like almost like a, he almost approaches it as like, I'm a stoner. Like he's not a stoner, but like that's the way that he thinks, like a psychologically grounded guy. I don't know. It's so strange, but I'm like kind of hooked on it. And also like, it's the most basic ass like,
oh, sure.
Like peanut butter and jelly of TV shows ever. And like, I found myself just like, I don't know. I'm like kind of hooked on it. Like I'm going to stop watching it in 27 days because I have Peacock and the others I watched it is because I see those clips from Oliver Platt on TikTok and I'll stop watching it and I won't miss it. But right now I'm kind of obsessed.
No. And I think I've told the story before where I was like on a super tight deadline working on this complicated project. It melted my brain. And I think I'd put in like a 12-hour day or something like that. And my partner Hazel was watching at the time, was sort of like hat on while working, Grey's Anatomy.
Oh, yeah.
And I went in the other room like with them and was watching it. And I was like, I get this. Like, this is exactly what I want, right? Like, my brain can't process stuff. I don't want to deal with complicated things. This is dumb and perfect. And so I totally get it. Like, there's a space for that kind of stuff.
So, John, I hear the next episode of the show, we're going to do something a little different in that we're going to watch a movie and then discuss it.
Okay. Who'd you hear that from?
Oh, my friend Marcy.
Oh, we are going to watch Love and Monsters from 2020. starring Dylan O'Brien, directed by Michael Matthews, and written by one of the Brian Duffield.
Later changed his last name because he was ashamed of being from a field and started Stranger Things.
No, he did No One Will Save You.
Okay.
Which we both really enjoyed. So, yeah, we'll have that. We'll have a special guest joining us to chat about that. And so that'll be fun. You should listen.
Indeed. Go do that. And we will catch you on the flip-flop.
Mm-hmm. Just like, well, how about the flip-op? No, wait, that would be better for this episode because we did Oppenheimer. Anyway, that's it.
I am become end of episode destroyer of podcast. Bye.
Bye.